Welcome to the Dumb Weebs Podcast. I am V-Lord GTZ, and with me I have my fellow weebs, Laser Kid and Allison.
Hello.
We're alive, at least for now.
Yeah, unfortunately, J-Mac and Alien couldn't be with us today. They were murdered. We don't know how.
They'll be back next time, somehow.
Yeah, we're gonna have to get the Dragon Balls or something. I don't know. But we'll figure out the paperwork. Hopefully not get sued.
Yeah, we'll be fine, I think.
I think we'll be alright. I got the 4-star ball, so I think we're gonna get started.
Yeah, just like 6 left. It's gonna be a fun little lighthearted adventure. And that's sort of similar to the movie that we're talking about today, A Whisker Away.
This movie was sad.
It's sad but happy, but it takes you through the gamut.
Yeah, it's kind of a mix of everything. It's more like a heartfelt movie, I guess, is the best way to describe it. So this is a movie that was released on Netflix back in June, and it had like a pretty solid cast behind it, particularly it's directed by Junichi Sato, who directed the first 2 seasons of the original Sailor Moon, and also co-directed by Tomotaka Shibayama, who's worked on a lot of various shows and movies in different directorial type roles. He was a unit director on Anthem of the Heart and the Saint Young Men movie. And then this is written by Mari Okada, super huge name anime. I'm sure many people remember her movie Makia, which is absolutely beautiful, and if you haven't watched it, you should definitely go and get it. It's amazing. And then, to make it even better, it's animated by Studio Colorido. And Colorido has done a lot of really cool things. They did Penguin Highway a while back, and they've been doing the current series of Pokemon
shorts. Really?
Yeah, they're doing those Pokemon shorts that have been going on right now.
Twilight Wings.
Yeah, I somehow blanked on the name, but yeah, they're Colorido's doing Twilight Wings right now. So yeah, they're known for some really high quality animation. So I remember a lot of people being excited for this, but because it just came on Netflix at a time where I guess I wasn't really watching anything, I just kind of completely forgot about it until we were trying to figure out something to watch for this episode.
Hey, I've seen this. Oh yeah, but have you seen that? No. Have you seen this? No. Oh hey, here's something we can all watch. It's on Netflix.
Yeah.
And it's a cool movie.
Yeah, I was split between this or Lou Over the Wall. And I think Allison was the one who really wanted to do A Whisker Away, so I was okay, yeah, it's cats. Who doesn't like cats?
Yeah, I kind of heard of this movie because I follow the Japanese Netflix account, and they do a much better job at promoting their anime more than English Netflix does. Plus, the voice actor guy who does Tanjiro and Demon Slayer was tweeting a lot about it. Because he was in it.
Yeah, Natsuki Hanai, our good old good boy Tanjiro.
Yeah, good old boy Tanjiro. / animal Tanjiro. YouTuber.
Yeah, so it's interesting, and we didn't do this intentionally, but so Laser and I ended up watching this movie in English while Allison watched it subbed. So we have a little bit of a mix of experiences here, which is kind of nice. And honestly, looking at both casts, they both look really solid. I see a lot of prolific names on the Japanese side, and the English side also had a lot of big names too. So it definitely looks like they put the right step forward with this dub.
Definitely feels that way. Yeah, the dub, I loved it. Everybody was on point. Everyone did a great job. The characters were really well acted. Whoever directed this also, A+, great direction on that dub.
Yeah, for sure. I believe the director was Megan Buchholz.
Good job. It was really well done.
Yeah, a few other shows that they've done are Violet Evergarden, and yeah, Dora Hedoro, Drifting Dragons, Beastars. So a lot of very good dubs, all like most of which are like Netflix dubs, which kind of makes sense because I think this was done over at Spliced Bread.
Sliced Bread.
Not Sliced Bread, Spliced Bread.
Wait, is that the name of the studio that dubbed it?
Yeah, the studio's called Spliced Bread Productions.
What? That's crazy, man. That's a crazy good title.
It's the greatest thing since Spliced Bread.
Apparently. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Spliced Bread has done, like, quite a few dubs. Like, they did Brand New Animal, Devilman Crybaby, King Ghidorah, Knights of Cydonia, most of the Netflix dubs, just looking off of their like credits list, which makes sense because like the majority of Netflix dubs are pretty good. So hey, I guess no reason to change what's not broken.
Indeed.
But yeah, I guess we should probably just get into the story itself here. The thing with A Whisker Away is that, like, there isn't, like, too much complicated plot elements. It's a fairly straightforward, like, coming-of-age story in a way. So, it focuses on, like, this young middle school girl, Mio Sasaki, also nicknamed Muge, who has the ability to turn into a cat. And when she turns into a cat, she always visits her, like, crush, Hinode. And Hinode has, like, this very strong attachment to Muge in this cat form. Like, he refers to her as Taro, which is kind of the name of his, like, dead dog, which is kind of depressing. Like, he sees, like, a lot of the qualities that his old pet had, like, in Taro. So, like, they kind of gain this kind of, like, strong, like, bond together. But when Muge is, like, a human, like, they don't really have that type of relationship. And, like, Muge wants to get, like, closer to Hinode. But Hinode doesn't seem super interested.
He's a tsundere boy.
I guess, sorta. I think part of it, too, is that, like, I'm not gonna lie here. What Muge does in the early parts of the movie are pretty cringe.
Yeah, if I was in high school and that was a girl was doing that, I would not have gotten the message. It would have gone right over my head, and I'd just been like, "Okay, crazy person, I'm going away now," just like he does.
Well, like I think like it was, the message was pretty obvious that like she was like in love with Hinode, but it was like more of the thing of like she was obsessive over it.
Right.
Yeah, but aren't they, like, middle schoolers in this movie?
Yeah, they like, are, but, like, even for a middle schooler, I feel like this was very hyper. And, like, it's not like she was acting like a madman or anything, but, like, it's very clear that, like, Muge had a very kind of idealized view on, like, romance. And she was just trying to, like, magically, like, get into this relationship with Hinode without really, like, considering his comfort level and, like, assuming, like, oh, he loves me when I'm Taro, so therefore he's gonna love me when I'm Muge. Which is, like, kind of interesting, and I do like how the movie kind of dives into both Muge and Hinode's kind of personal struggles. Like, we see, like, Muge is, like, a child of a divorce, and, like, her father's now, like, remarrying, and, like, she has to get adjusted to, like, kind of living with, like, her stepmother, and, like, kind of just, like, living in a new household environment where she feels like she doesn't necessarily belong, or where, like, she feels like she's not, like, being, like, considered at all by those around her. So, like, being a cat and being Taro is kind of an escape for that. Which is pretty interesting, and, like, in a way, Hinode is also kind of using Taro as an escape for his own struggles, because, like, he's being pressured by his family to kind of, like, be the breadwinner when he grows up. Like, even though, like, he's in middle school, they're already, like, thinking of, like, oh, like, you have to go to, like, this college and everything, and, like, you have to make a ton of money to support everyone. And it's clear that, like, that's not where his passion area is. And as we learn, like, as, like, the movie goes on, like, he's interested in, like, pottery. Like, his grandfather is a potter, and, like, so he wants to kind of follow his grandfather's footsteps instead of, like, going in a more kind of, like, traditional path. So, like, it very much focuses on kind of these adolescent struggles, which is something, like, Mario Okada has definitely shown in a lot of her, like, other writings. Makiya also had a lot of similar things. While Makiya was more focused on, like, the relationship between, like, mother and child, like, the child character in Makiya had a lot of that kind of similar, character arc elements to him, where, like, he's trying to find his place of belonging. And, like, you definitely see that here with Mugen Hinode as well.
I also really liked how he contrasted with his sister, who had interest but for a very different reason, but she's also a lot less vocal about it, although he had struggles being vocal at first too, which was, like, an interesting thing as well.
Yeah, like, it's kind of interesting because, like, Hinode's sister is definitely a far more vocal character, and, like, she's also very thirsty for that one pottery worker. But yeah, it's kind of an interesting contrast where, like, you can definitely see that, like, Hinode really kind of, like, as much as, like, he doesn't want to admit it, like, he's kind of admires Mugen and, like, the people around him that can be, like, vocal, because that's something he can't do. But even in Mugen's case, Mugen feels the same way about Hinode, where Hinode has this strong passion that Mugen feels like she lacks. And Mugen also is kind of struggling to really, like, be vocal about her needs and her wants to, like, her family.
Isn't that kind of like a Japanese culture thing where they can't really be too expressive or else they'll get shunned by society, like, emotion wise?
I don't want to necessarily generalize, but, like, at least from what I've heard from, like, some of my friends that have, like, lived and, like, worked in Japan, like, it's definitely kind of this it's kind of like you, like, a lot of people in Japan have this kind of more, like, focus on society approach, like, thinking of the greater whole rather than the individual. So, like, if, like, what you're doing isn't, like, necessarily benefiting, like, everyone around you or, like, your family or your loved ones, like, being selfish isn't necessarily, like, isn't looked well upon necessarily, which, yeah, it definitely kind of ties into very much kind of that type of culture. And that's really a thing in a lot of Asian cultures too, where it's like, you're kind of expected to really be, like, a pillar for your family in the future. Like, even in, like, I can speak on Indian culture, obviously, that, like, even in Indian culture, that's kind of a thing where, like, you definitely have, like, parents and family members that kind of expect these, like, things of you in the future, like, necessarily, like, having a successful job and, like, supporting the people around you. And that's definitely a similar thing that Mugen and Hinode are going through, right? In, like, right in, like, the middle of the story.
Yeah, because I know it's kind of different, at least compared to here, where they're, when you're that age, you're kind of, like, treated like a baby while also similarly told to grow up. While in Japan,
yeah,
it's the opposite, sort of, with the culture, I guess. It's really confusing trying to compare. But that's what I know watching.
I mean, I guess regardless of the cultural, like, differences here, though, like, I think the message still comes across pretty well, where it's, like, it's these kids that are facing these kind of just bigger pressures of the future, and they don't really know necessarily how to handle it in, like, a healthy way, or at least, like, a way that is going to ensure, like, their happiness moving forward.
They both seem to be, you know, delving in one level or another in a bit of escapism, much more directly in Inori's case, where she can turn into a cat and just go, haha, I'm a cat, screw you all. But even with Kento, he's like, or Hinode, he's kind of hanging out in the pottery, kind of like focusing on that, I think, at first, I'd say, as almost a diversion from his problems. But later on, he kind of opens up and like, okay, I got to tackle these problems. It's not that the pottery is bad, it's that he was using it more than just for the experience.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And it's like, I do like how it kind of frames everything in this film, where it's not just straight up telling you, like, okay, this is the problem that this character's having. Like, it slowly kind of doles it out to you, and you kind of understand, like, okay, like, the surface value of these characters is not who they really are. It's kind of a mask to really kind of disguise, like, their true feelings. And that also kind of ties into the whole mask motif in this movie, because, like, there is a cat-thick storekeeper that sells masks. And the reason, like, Muge can turn into a cat is because, like, this mask salesman just, like, gives her a mask that will let her turn into the cat. But, like, the catch is that he keeps bothering her to, like, make a choice of whether you want to stay as a cat forever or be, like, a human again. And, like, it's super hella sketchy. Like,
it's super hella sketchy, and you see, I'm gonna say, Strip, you see the conflict coming a mile away. You know exactly what's gonna happen.
Oh, yeah, the moment you see him, you're like, okay, yeah, this is the bad guy.
This is the bad guy, and she's going to get tricked or upset and make the choice to be a cat and then realize, oh, I screwed up, and now we gotta make me human again. That, to that level, it's super foreseeable. But it's the little character beats that get them there that make the movie fun.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like, the point where, like, Muge ends up, like, trying to give up on her, like, her own, like, humanity and become a cat is, like, so sad, because, like...
It got me. Yeah. I'm not gonna lie, it totally got me.
Like, Hinode is, like, kind of just, like, lashing out his, like, embarrassment at her, and... God, you really feel sorry for Muge there. It's like, oof.
Yeah, I mean, she went to the trouble to write him a note, and then Jackass, the asshole classmate, we all had one, we all know this guy, don't be that guy, but we all know this guy, decided, I'm gonna read it to the group. I am serving humanity somehow by doing this.
And I love how in the English dub, that, like, character is voiced by Bryce Papenbrook, so I was just imagining Inosuke the entire time.
Yeah, kind
of. He just grabs the note and puts on a boar mask.
Yep. I'm gonna read your note now, because I'm Inosuke.
I'm gonna put divots in the chalk to make it look cool. But yeah, like, after that moment, like, the story really kind of shifts, like, in tone a little bit. Like, because at first, like, Muge seems like she's kind of happy, but then she realizes, like, wait, the longer I'm in cat form, the longer, like, my kind of, like, knowledge of being human is kind of fades away.
She also gets to see the people she cares about worry and look for her when she just assumed they wouldn't care.
Yeah, because, like, she's definitely kind of in this mentality where it's like, oh, nothing matters anymore. Like, my life's over. No one's going to miss me. No one loves me. So, like, when she decides to be a cat, she's like, okay, I'll finally be happy. No, nothing bad's gonna happen. But then you see everyone's nothing just, like, bad really worried.
To cats.
Yeah, yeah, like, it's definitely kind of a wake up call for her, where she's like, "Wait, people do love me. Crap, I should probably go back to being human." But then it's like, "Oh wait, it's not that simple. The cat that lives with my stepmom is, like, now in my body."
And being kind of a jerk about it at first, too. You're like, nah, I'm the daughter now, and I don't want my owner to be sad, so I want to be there, and tough luck. Bye.
Yeah, like, I do kind of, like, sympathize with some of the logic that the cat uses.
It makes sense, because it's a cat.
Yeah.
And the cat logic would be, I want to make my owner happy. You yelled and screamed at my owner, and I'm not going to last much longer. Doing this will make the owner happier. It's a twisted logic, but I can see it coming from, like, a non-human mindset very easily, especially because she gets knocked out of that pretty quickly.
It's kind of an interesting twist, too, because, like, you definitely see the cat, Kinako, I think is, like, her name. Like, she's, like, not very friendly with Muge early on in the movie. Like, there are times where, like, Kinako will just, like, growl at her. Just, like, when she shows up. So, like, having her kind of be, like, a...
She didn't just do that. She was like, oh, they're yelling about you, and you're trying to hide. Ha ha ha! Meow!
Yeah, so it's, like, having her get involved in this whole plotline is kind of interesting. But, yeah, like you said, though, like, she does very quickly kind of realize, like, wait, this is not what my master would actually want. Because, like, when they go back, like, to the house, like, Muge's, like, stepmom's, like, very kind of worried still about the cat, like, yeah, her name is Kaoru, and, like, Kaoru is just kind of, like, super mopey, and, like, she's trying to go out and search for Kineko and putting up all these wanted, not wanted signs, find me signs?
Missing cat signs.
Yeah, missing cat signs. I was blanking for some reason, but yeah, missing cat signs. Yeah, so it's like, you kind of get the mentality that Kineko was going for, because like, she's at the end of her lifespan as a cat. So like, she's like, oh, I can just continue on as this like, daughter. Because like, the daughter doesn't love my master, so who cares? But like, that's not what Kaoru wants. And like, once Kineko realizes that, like, it kind of shifts over to like kind of Kineko working together with like Kinode to kind of return Muge back to her former self. And I like how they're very straightforward about it too with Kinode. Or like, Kineko just like info drops the entire plot on him.
She kind of does. She's like, oh, hey, by the way, all of this shit has been going on. And the best part is, she thinks he figured it out when he totally didn't.
Yeah, because, like, he just thinks, like, Muge's been quirky or something. Because, like, Kineko has just been going to school and everything as Muge. But, like, obviously, like, she doesn't act at all like her. So, like, something's clearly off.
Yeah, he picks up something's off. He had no idea about Katniss. He's like, aha, you have figured it out. You have solved the mystery. Let me fill you in on the mystery that you clearly have solved and don't need me to tell you. But I will tell you anyway. Yeah. I'm making fun of it, but it's actually legitimately hilarious. I liked it. It was a fun moment.
Yeah. There are a lot of humorous moments in this movie. While there is some serious subtext to it, like, most of the cat scenes are kind of pretty, like, either funny or adorable.
I like how the jokes that would be gross aren't really, like, gross either.
Yeah, I mean, like, I can't really think of any, like, dirty jokes in this movie.
It's a very family-friendly movie. Like, I would honestly say, I don't know that I'd actually put a major age range on it. It works pretty well for even probably kids.
Yeah, it's a solid G movie, I'd give it. I would show this to a kid. Like, there's nothing...
Totally.
There's nothing violent in it or anything.
No, I mean, it's a good, fun, family-friendly adventure. It's good stuff. And hey, lessons learned!
Yay, lessons...
It feels like one of those really old Ghibli movies from the 90s.
I agree. That was going to say, it feels like a Ghibli or a old school Disney even.
Yeah, sort of. And I think that's definitely kind of like the type of like tone they're going for. More like lighthearted and like really kind of like making a story that's for everyone, which is always nice to see. But, like, yeah, so, like, once Hinode and Kineko are kind of on the same page, they basically try to go and rescue Muge, because Muge went to go hunt down the mask salesman, like, in another...
And this did not go well.
Yeah, like, because they go into, like, this other cat world, where everyone's, like, an anthropomorphic cat, which is kind of weird.
It's like the realm of cats. It's what it reminded me of is the other animal, the beast world in The Boy and the Beast. That's what this reminded me of.
Yeah, I guess so. It's like they went to the human world and then they went to Beastars.
Yeah, kinda. Yeah, that is kinda how it felt. Like, she has to go through a Tori gate, so there's definitely like a mystical aspect to it. And...
Yeah, but essentially, like, the rest of the movie is like pretty basic, like. They kind of all meet up. They beat big, thick cat guy. And
thick cat guy who has, like, three rounds of the fight, but they beat him.
That was pretty funny, though, because, like, every time you think he's gone, he just, like, comes back, like...
Yeah. It's like, I'm back! Oh, it's you, thick cat.
Oh, that cat. Yeah, I do love at the end of the cat fight, though, where, like, all the other cats that, like, Muge encountered in the cat world, like, just show up and start beating the heck out of, like, the thick cat.
Well, it's because they were humans who also got tricked.
Yeah, so, like, yeah, we can't turn back into humans, but, like, we're at least gonna make sure she can.
I mean, one of them comments, she's a child, you jerk! He's like, yes, well, all the more lifespan for me! And they're like, you're an asshole!
Yeah, that's one thing that I think is worth, like, bringing up, too. Like, all those, like, cats, yeah, they were, like, implied to be adults, and like compared to like Mugen's problems, a lot of them were like far more complex and serious in a way. Like the prominent female cat in the group was mentioning how like she used to be a mother, but like she felt like she wouldn't be able to give a good like upbringing to her children, so she ran away from her problems and stuff.
One really hurt, especially given how Hinore's mother, or not Hinore's mother, sorry, Muge's mother left her. And I felt very direct parallels to that. If we didn't have the mother character, I would have guessed it was her.
Yeah. And but also when you think about it, it's like, wow, yeah, like compared to Muge's issue, like right now, like they had far bigger burdens, and that's why they realized like, yeah, she's still just a kid. Like this is natural struggles. Like she shouldn't like try to necessarily run away from that, because like that's just a part of like growing up.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they beat up the mass salesman cat guy, and they essentially just kind of leave the cat world, come back, and like they're able to turn back into humans, and like Muge and Hinode essentially just confess their love for each other, and that's where the movie ends. A very simple plot, but a good plot.
It's simple, it's basic, but it's enjoyable, it's well done. I like, the quality of it, I don't know if we can really properly convey, because it's all in the way it's conveyed, the way the characters are, even just the voice acting, the way they move, the way they react to things, it's all a quality of production level, really, thing.
Yeah, like, this doesn't have, like, a lot of, like, the more high-octane, like, animation that you'd expect from Colorido, like, at least, like, if you've seen, like, Penguin Highway or their Pokemon shorts, but, like, if you look at the subtleties of the animation, like, how the characters move, how the cats move, it's all very well detailed, and you can definitely see a lot of effort was put into making sure all these kind of subtleties of the movements are very natural and concrete. Like, even, like, hand movements in the film, like, you'll notice, like, a lot of the hand movements are very kind of meticulous, like, every finger feels very independent.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that.
So yeah, from like a production standpoint, it's really nice. The story is simple, but like it's a kind of a nice story that really is for all ages, and it really takes its time kind of doling it out. Like, this is like an hour and 45 minute film. So like you could honestly, if you're just trying to be focusing on plot, you could probably dole this out in like an hour or less. But because it kind of spreads it out and really kind of lets the story breathe, it gives it a lot more of a personality.
I can definitely agree with that.
Yeah, I think, like, overall, I enjoyed this film a fair bit. It was a nice, fun watch.
Enjoyable, good. And I'm glad we watched it for this, because honestly, I probably never would have seen it otherwise.
Honestly, like, if we hadn't watched it for this, I probably would have held off on, like, watching it for, like, another year or something. That's what happens with me in movies when I don't see them in, like, a theater. I just kind of, like, forget about them. Like, there are exceptions, obviously, like, if it's a Lupin film or something. But, like,
yeah.
Usually it kind of just goes to the wayside of my mind, because, like, I'm not the type of person who usually watches movies at home.
I kind of like it, because I don't have to worry about, like, missing anything by needing to pee or needing to feel hungry, so I want to go eat something.
Yeah.
I gotta be in the right mood to watch a movie at home or in the movie theater. It's a different mood. It's a different feel.
Yeah, I think part of it too is because I don't live alone. Like, I'm too worried about distractions, and I feel with movies, like, you're meant to watch them in this, like, continuous immersion. And if I can't have that immersion, I feel like it's much harder to get invested into a movie.
Well,
yeah.
That makes sense.
I mean, luckily when I was watching this, I didn't really have that problem too much. Like, I had to stop and pause, like, maybe once or twice to go quickly do something. But overall, I was able to, like, kind of just, like, watch it at, like, the natural pace continuously.
Yeah. The first time I watched it, I had to, like, pause a little bit because the dog wanted something or whatever. But, like, the second time...
Pause that at one point, but...
Yeah, but, like, the second time, it was a little easier to understand. I think it was probably also because I was watching it in Japanese, so I had to, like, actually watch it compared to English, where I'm just listening.
Allison had to go into hardcore mode We chose the easy mode.
I mean, the second time, there's a hell of foreshadowing that I missed when I didn't watch it the first time. But maybe that's just because I'm dumb and didn't notice it because I wasn't paying attention to the certain words they were using.
There are quite a few subtle details, like, that I noticed throughout, like, just, like, certain characters showing up kind of in the backgrounds or foregrounds, or just, like, little subtle details that kind of foreshadow the later events, too. So, yeah, it's a very well-thought-out film, and, like, I think because it has, like, a lot of breathing room, it has the time to plant all these seeds fairly, like, early on, so, like, everything feels natural when, like, the twists come in later on.
Definitely, and it honestly, I'd say it's more of a Chekhov's gun. Like, you know she's going to have to deal with the losing her human face as soon as the subject comes up.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it's nothing is necessarily surprising or comes out of, like, left field, but I'd say how it's handled is what is the most entertaining part of it, where, like, you're just kind of seeing, like, okay, how are they going to overcome this? Like, what is going to be the kind of ending message of this struggle? And I think from that perspective, Whisker Away does a very good job of conveying its story to, like, the audience.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with that. And what I really love, because I was worried for a while, I was worried, this is going to be a damsel story, isn't it? It isn't. Both parties have to put in the effort to deal with the problem. Neither one alone would have made this work.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I do love that it's not just like, oh, Muge's sad, and, like, Hinode is just this, like, perfect, like, pretty boy character. Like, they both are dealing with, like, serious issues and normal issues of, like, adolescence. And, like, that's kind of their bonding point, too, is that they have kind of these similar struggles. Because, like, at the beginning of the movie, too, it definitely could come off like, oh, this is just, like, a one-sided relationship on Muge's, like, point of view. Like, she's just trying to, like, force herself onto Hinode. And to an extent, that is true. But it's also, like, you realize that they do kind of have that kind of common connection. And that's where that relationship starts to, like, foster during the film.
Yeah,
I can definitely see that. Like, the characters both grow and change just throughout the narrative of the movie, and that's what makes a good story.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so, do you guys have any other final thoughts?
It's pretty. I think I've covered the story as well as I can.
I think you guys did a good job of explaining everything. I just really enjoyed it. It felt like one of those really old school anime movies that they don't really make anymore.
You know, I could see that. I actually do. I know the type you mean, and yes, it really does feel like those.
Yeah, like, you don't really see these types of movies much anymore, like, in general, I feel. Like, I guess in terms of anime examples, like, the last one I can really think of, I'd say it probably would be Oko's Inn or Mary and the Witch's Flower. At least in terms of kind of that more, like, lighthearted, but, like, still, like, kind of more kind of, like, coming-of-age type story of sorts.
Yeah, I mean, they make these, but, like, a lot of them are, like, attached to stuff that's already famous in some kind of way or situation. Whereas this kind of felt more like an original thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it helps that it comes from such a kind of well-recognized kind of staff of people that, like, there is kind of that ability to really kind of tell these types of stories, which is nice. And yeah, I hope that we see kind of more movies of this sort from this team, or really just more movies from Studio Colorido and who was ever willing to work with them. Because I think, like, Colorido, just from the few films and, like, short series and stuff that they've made, have just done a fantastic job of really kind of showing the wonders of animation and really showing, like, what you can really do in the medium. And I'd love to see more long-form productions from them.
I feel like this movie might get a lot more buzz than Penguin Highway did, because this one is on Netflix, while Penguin Highway is only, like, on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
It's also on Netflix in the middle of a pandemic, and so everyone's bored. So I do agree. This is probably going to get well seen, which is good. I think it should be.
It also has a little bit. It also has an easier story for Westerners to adapt to, while Penguin Highway, weird age gap romance that a lot of Americans would think would be gross.
I mean, like, Penguin Highway is definitely, I think, more of a kind of nuanced and complicated story in a way, especially, like, because it also kind of factors in kind of more environmental messages and also kind of even a few, like, science, like, fiction ideas, too. Which is, I guess, not too surprising because, like, the author, Morimi, like, he's the guy who created, like, Tatami Galaxy and, like, Night is Short, Walk on Girl. So, like, he's kind of known for making these very kind of, like, out there type stories.
It felt like Diet Yuasa.
Well, Yuasa didn't work on Penguin Highway, though.
No, I mean, it felt like Diet Yuasa, you know, where you get the crazy shit.
I mean, like, Yuasa's adapted some of Morimi's stories before, so...
I mean, like, it had a bit of crazy shit in there, but not the crazy shit that would be in a Yuasa thing, if that makes sense.
I guess, yeah, that sort of makes sense. Because, like, Yuasa is known for working with, like, Morimi stuff, so, like, it's, like, when you take out the Yuasa from Morimi, like, I guess, like, it definitely has a lot of the kind of, like, strange elements, but because it's not associated with, like, Yuasa's kind of, like, more crazy animation style. Like, that's kind of, like, lost. But I think, like, in terms of Penguin Highway, like, I thought it was a very, like, great showing from Colorido just because, like, it showed kind of their prowess, like, for animation, like, in film. And also, like, they adapt, like, the story very well, and, like, it's a very kind of well-thought-out story. But I think because, yeah, it didn't really get as much promotion, I think partly because, like, yeah, like, Tatami Galaxy and Night is Short, like, have their cult followings, but I feel part of that cult following is also associated with Yuasa rather than Morimi himself. So, like, you definitely had less people really flocking to it than other types of productions. Well, I feel like because Whisker Away was on Netflix, like, more people are just going to naturally find it just if they're looking for, like, a film to kill time or a film to watch, like, with their family.
Yeah, and a lot of fangirls probably heard of it because of the voice actor tweeting about it on his Twitter.
That too. You can never go wrong with Seiyu creating hype.
True.
Especially when he has over 1 million followers.
Wait, Hanai has over 1 million followers?
Yeah, like, a lot of people follow that guy.
I guess I'm not too surprised because he's also, like, a streamer.
Yeah, he does the YouTubes and he posts a lot of cat pictures.
I guess, yeah, it's very fitting that he's in this movie then.
Yes.
But I think this is a good point to just wrap up here. So, Laser, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at LaserKidPrime. And you can find me on YouTube at LaserKid, assuming I actually get that channel going.
And Allison, where can people find you?
At Meowth900 on Twitter.com. Where can they find you, VLord?
People can find me on Twitter at VLordGTZ. I'm usually on there talking about whatever I'm doing, which is usually either reading manga, writing reviews, or not sleeping. Or all three at the same time. Because that's just more what normal. I do.
How's that BTS review going, good sir?
It's going pretty well. It was a surprisingly really good read. So yeah.
Yeah, Lady Awards reviewing a BTS book.
Yeah, hopefully it's out by the time this episode's out. But speaking of my reviews, you can check out my manga and light novel focused reviews over on all-comic.com, and I also write Tanami focused articles and anime reviews over on TanamiFaithful.com, so check out those as well. But I also do quite a few podcasts. I used to do the Demon Slayer podcast anime episodes with Laser and Allison here. We're still doing manga episodes though, because there's still plenty to talk about in the Demon Slayer world. So you can check out the Demon Slayer podcast over on Twitter at DSlayerPodcast. But aside from that, I also do the ACT Dodge podcast, where we talk about the amazing Shonen Jump series Act Dodge, and that is found on Twitter at Act Dodge Podcast. And both of those podcasts are on basically every streaming platform for podcasts, so just go look them up and give them a listen. But as far as the Dumb Weebs podcast goes, you can find us on Twitter at Dumb Weebs Pod, and you can listen to the podcast on basically anything as well. So whether it's Spotify, Anchor, Google Podcasts, you name it, we're there. So just go give us a listen and subscribe and enjoy everything. But that does it for this episode. So we will see you guys later.
Be nice to your cats.
Bye bye. Or else they'll kill you. Like how I'll kill Laser for that terrible pun earlier.